do you see parallels between yourself and John Wesley Powell?
Oh, gosh, only in the very vaguest sense. We both went down this river, or I go down the river still. I'm still a river guide in Grand Canyon. I and all of us who run this river are standing on his shoulders and all the other shoulders of the people who came before us. So I think that might be the only real parallel. He had a real broad view of the world and a real broad view of things. And I like to try and have a big picture view, but I don't think I've accomplished or achieved quite as much as he was able to do in that regard.
How has being a paleontologist affected how you experience the river?
I think as a paleontologist and geologist, I have a different sense of time than a lot of people who go down the river. Like, we are one frame in a movie that's been going on for billions of years and will continue on after us for billions of years. And that's not to negate our role in, you know, what we do to this planet and damaging the planet. But it does remind me that, above all, the planet will survive us. And that's kind of comforting at certain times.
How has being a guide shaped your relationship to the Colorado River?
It's helped me understand the river system as a whole. And then I think that just helps me understand these are all parts of a whole and that you can't separate out and say, well, Grand Canyon is this, and all we need to do is pay attention to Grand Canyon. It's all connected, and we have to pay attention to the whole thing.
How has being a guide and a scientist, how have those roles informed each other?
To me, the Grand Canyon, really any place outdoors, is one of the greatest classrooms in the world. I try and use my time on the river to help people understand where they are from all these different perspectives, whether it's geological, archaeological, ecological, just to give people a sense of their planet and try and connect it with their own landscape, whether it's Kentucky or Ohio, or New York City, or right here in Colorado. So I think that having that scientific background really helps because it makes accessible what is often perceived as very inaccessible for people, i.e. science. But you get out there in the landscape and all of a sudden it makes a ton of sense and people come away with a better understanding of it.
What inspired you to write this book?
Well, the book is actually the companion volume to a film that is currently making its way around the film festival circuit and will be out for distribution at some point. But the film is the same name, and the book and the film basically go together, but they each stand apart. The film is organized the same way that the book is. In 9 different sections, but the book goes into much greater detail than the film is able to. So the film is really more of an artistic perspective on the Colorado River and our relationship to it. And then the book, it was originally going to be a textbook, but we realized that getting a textbook published in this country is pretty much impossible. So we opted for what a friend of mine calls a coffee table book with brain. So it's it has all the information that the film implies, but can't really go into because of, you know, length constraints and things like that. So that's how the book came into being.
You mentioned the importance of having an intimate and personal connection to these landscapes. What's a time you experienced or felt that in your own life?
We go down the Grand Canyon, and what people say, so they'll say, oh my gosh, I feel so small and I feel so insignificant. I guess I have exactly the opposite perspective when I'm out there. I feel small, but I feel very significant. I am a part of all of this. I'm, you know, one little cog in this huge sort of being that is our planet and everything on it. I like that feeling. I'm a part of it all.
Since you've had this relationship with the Colorado River, have you noticed or experienced changes in it?
Most of the changes that I've noticed have been in areas surrounding the river that can affect the river, whether it's uranium mining or development of places near the Grand Canyon or other parts of the Colorado Plateau. I have noticed some changes. There's definitely changes in the way the dams are managed, and that affect the resources downstream. We've noticed a lot of things like beaches getting smaller in the Grand Canyon and disappearance of native fish. And so there are changes that we can see even over a matter of a few decades. It doesn't take millions of years to have these changes occur to our landscapes.
Yeah, I guess specifically, what did John Wesley Powell perceive about our current water situation, and how did he in some ways predict that?
Well, he recognized that the lands west of what was called, you know, the 100th meridian, the 100th latitude line, which is roughly, you know, the line that roughly runs down through central Texas. Lands west of that, exclusive of the Pacific Northwest, they needed to be managed differently in terms of water, because they did not have enough water to just be able to irrigate wherever you wanted to, unlike the east, where as long as there was rain falling, you could grow crops. And he recognized that you just couldn't have these enormous scale irrigation projects and be managing water the way that it was managed in the east. And he saw the conflicts that were going to be coming. He said there is not enough water to supply these lands. And at the time, even back then, hundreds of thousands and, you know, more than a million people coming into some of these territories, he saw that there was a conflict coming. And he had a really different perspective on how the land should be settled and managed. That was basically not by dividing things up into these states with straight lines like we have today, and not taking into account the watersheds and the courses of rivers, but by settling them as watershed commonwealths, so that each watershed would be in charge of its own water, and everybody within that watershed would be responsible for managing the water and providing the resources and the raw materials and the goods that everyone else within that watershed needed. And so not just the Colorado River watershed, this huge watershed, but within the Colorado River watershed, there are a lot of other smaller ones. When you live in one, the Roaring Fork is a watershed. And so that was his perspective. And, you know, there's a little more detail to it than that that I'll go into in the talk. But it was a very unusual way of perceiving how to manage water and how to live in this environment.